Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
My chick, 1-2-1-2, 1-2-1-2.
Not the 1-2,
the 2.
No.
What is wrong with that?
I think that rancher hat's doing something to you.
I mean.
You getting that twang in your voice?
I got me a little twang. My chick.
My friends call me Brantisha, the school teacher.
I don't have a cool name, but I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on Teachers Who Talk Crime
Podcast.
Yeah, we're here again. Episode Ocho.
8.
Yeah, in case you didn't know.
Yep.
But it's in the title, so.
It's also in the show notes.
Yeah, so yeah. Welcome back. I'm in Alabama.
Still?
Yeah, chilling.
Like a villain.
In Alabama.
Making you spend money.
Yeah. I bought me a nice new jacket today. Yeah. It got all the Looney Tunes on it.
Yeah. And we have flavors for your loaded tea that you don't have in Delaware.
Yes. I was literally in the store like, Brooke, you got the tropical pack? We don't got that in Delaware.
She is converting me. I bought silver linings. Lessons,
yep.
Items today.
Beep, beep,
I'm gonna give it a go.
I know she was a little like, oh, I don't know. I was like, girl.
It'll change your life.
And what is it doing? Changing your life.
Changing lives.
Mm-hmm.
Thick thighs save lives.
So do loaded tees.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They do. Mm-hmm. So go see what we're talking about on Silver Lining Lessons. It's in our link tree for loaded teas if you are a caffeine freak like us.
Yes.
Speaking of caffeine.
Speaking.
We have a Buy Me a Coffee.
Yes.
You can go to buymeacoffee.com/TTC podcast if you would like to buy us a loaded tea or a coffee to get through the day.
Please and thank you.
And our Instagram, if you would like to hit us up on there and give us a follow.
Follow us.
Or DM us just because you want to.
To tell us your teacher stories. Yeah, no one sent us one yet.
I know. I really want them to.
Yeah, we do. Send
so
it to us.
Our Instagram is Teachers Talk Crime. And our email is teacherstalkcrimepodcast@gmail.com.
Gmail.
And of course, our TikToks.
Tickety talk.
Yep. Mine is southern.math.teacher.
And you already know mine is Branny with 3 Y's and an underscore.
Don't forget the underscore.
Never forget it. It's muy importante.
Exactly.
Yes.
I don't know who you'd get if you forgot the underscore.
A random.
An imposter.
I should probably look that up.
You probably should.
And tell her, change name, because I'm the original Branny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she might.
Yeah.
He might. We don't know.
I don't know. We don't know. Could be. But today, apparently, Brooke is taking us on a wild ride today.
Ooh, you just don't even know. So we got to jump actually right into it because this might be a long one. But please stay with us because
yes.
It is worth it.
Mm. If it's worth it.
Let me work.
Yep.
Put your thing.
And then.
That was pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Missy would be proud.
Yes. Shout out Missy.
So if you're ready, we're ready.
Mm-hmm.
So sit down.
Yep.
Shut up.
Yep.
The murder is about to begin.
Ahora. That means now.
What up, y'all? Welcome back. It's Teachers Talk Crime, and y'all already know what it is. We about to be in here talk about murder, suicide, dating violence, domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. So, y'all already know what it is. Don't sit here and act like y'all know. We about to get into it. So, if you're not ready, I'm going to need you to leave. All right, then.
So, this is the the case of Jasmine Richardson and her boyfriend, Jeremy Steike.
Why does this sound familiar?
Oh, it's crazy. I just hope you're ready because this case is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Mm. We're going to be addressing the case of the Richardson family. This case takes us back to Canada. I think we've mentioned Canada before. You did.
Did I?
I think you mentioned Canada.
I don't think I did.
Okay, well, we're mentioning Canada today.
Oh, shout out to Canada.
Yep. And I want to start by describing the Richardson family. Friends and neighbors and family members said they were a normal family by definition of what a family should be.
Okay.
So, yes, this is in Canada, but think about like the American dream family.
Okay. You know?
This is typical mom, dad, two kids kind of family.
So it's the Canadian dream.
Exactly.
Okay.
Mark is the father and the leader of the household. He was described as very handsome and hardworking. Deborah was the mother and the backbone of the family and was best known for her infectious personality and bright smile. Mark and Deborah met in 1990 at a gym in Ontario, Canada.
Yes, fitness. Right?
They had a lot in common, which pushed them closer together. They were both involved in recovery programs for substance abuse at the time of them meeting.
Okay.
Mark was your typical bad boy growing up and joined a biker club, which led to some heavy drug use. But luckily, he caught his abuse on his own and got the help that he needed.
Very nice.
The two were headed towards a bright future, and the couple moved quickly after meeting. In 1991, the two married. 2 years later, they gave birth to their first child, Jasmine Richardson. Jasmine had an infectious smile just like her mother. And if you would like to see, we're going to post her on our socials, as we mentioned before. So go take a look at that. Jasmine was picture perfect in the eyes of her parents, who adored her to the ends of the earth. She was their everything.
Oh.
People described. Mark, after Jasmine was born, found work in the oil industry, and this gave him new opportunities in life. So he moved the family to Okotoks, Alberta.
Okotoks.
I'm hoping I'm saying that right. Yeah. Okotoks, Alberta.
Okay.
Due to the boom of the oil industry. This is when the family added their second child, Jacob, to the family in 1998. He was the true definition of second child syndrome.
Oh.
He was full of energy and such a free spirit. And Mary, just shout out. Mary is definition of second child syndrome. She lives by the beat of her own drum. Like,
I feel like it's reverse for the twins. I mean, Aria, they're both obviously, like, technically Skylar is the firstborn, but Skylar is my free spirited child.
She is.
Yes.
She very much is. Skylar is a spirit animal in herself. So Jacob adored his older sister, which, yeah, I'm sure the two had their tips because he's the younger brother. She's the older sister. I'm sure he annoyed her constantly, like little brothers do, but nothing out of the ordinary.
Typical sibling rivalry.
Exactly. This family was middle class, but still living the dream. Deborah, knowing the importance of money, learned how to budget the family's income, all while making sure her kids never went without.
Very nice.
Right. This was a common theme among middle class families. Like, we were definitely middle class growing up.
Same.
And, like, we didn't go without, but I still to this day have not owned, like, a Louis bag.
Same.
Or anything
I
like that.
I mean, I got a Fooey.
I got a Fooey.
On Canal Street.
Yeah. I got a Fooey, too. So, I mean, I get it. The family were members of the local church. They were really trying to instill those Christian values into their kids growing up.
Okay.
And the two not only helped their kids be the best that they could be, but the couple continued to help others who struggled with addiction and helped them live sober lives.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So they like helped after even their own sobriety.
Yeah.
Deborah was a sponsor and mentor at Narcotics Anonymous, even speaking at several meetings. Her goal was just to be an inspiration to others and, like, help them overcome, like, the same addictions.
Yeah.
And in 2003, Mark and Deborah got just, like, grace and just luck, and Mark was promoted at work. The company even paid for the family to relocate. The family was now able to purchase a very nice, modest 3-bedroom house located in a suburban neighborhood in Medicine Hat.
Medicine Hat.
Isn't that a cool name?
That's an interesting name.
Medicine Hat. Yeah. Where do you live?
Medicine Hat.
I like the name of that town. This was the perfect area for the four of them just to be a family.
Yeah.
Not only was Mark thriving, but Deborah, who loved holistic therapy, dream catchers, and Reiki. I think that's how you say it. It's like a holistic practice.
That sounds about right.
Mm-hmm. And other like healing things. Like that. She was very much into that like lifestyle.
Okay.
And she decided to open up her own holistic therapy studio in their basement of their home.
Oh my gosh, how adorable is she?
I know. The kids seemed to be adjusting well to the new area, and Jasmine by now was 10 years old in the fifth grade and attending a Catholic school in the area. She was involved in fine arts program, and her teachers described her as studious, quiet, and just a well-behaved honor student.
She quiet.
They also said that Jasmine made friends fairly easy. Okay. But what she was really known for at this age in fifth grade, she would befriend the kids that had no one else.
Oh.
Exactly. She was really just your average honor student fifth grader, doing great in school.
Yeah.
She had a pink room with unicorns. Exactly. Like, you know, normal girl stuff. Oh, she gosh. Displayed pure innocence, but something happened with Jasmine.
Can I take a guess?
Sure.
She got a boyfriend.
Oh, well, that's a great guess. That is a really good guess.
Oh, so I'm wrong. Okay.
At the age of 11, so just 1 year later.
Okay.
Jasmine had a new look with a matching personality to go along with it.
Mm.
It is to be noted that some think that this had a connection to the fact that Jasmine matured early, physically, meaning she
developed
mm-hmm. and got, you know, her period before yeah. the other girls.
Okay.
This is so interesting to learn when I was researching this case. Did you know that early maturing girls are at increased risk of a range of psychosocial problems, including depression, substance use, and early sexual behavior? So girls that mature earlier than their friends are more likely to act out and rebel than those that don't.
I wonder why, though.
Maybe because they feel outcast. Like, why don't my friends understand what I'm going through?
Yeah.
Why is this body change happening to me but not my friends?
That
she's 11. Sense. I didn't get my period until I was 13.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Oh, I do. I don't remember. My mom made me stay at school.
I just remember that I was at my grandma's house and I thought that I pooped myself.
I pooped yourself?
And yeah, that's my story. So
there you go.
Yeah.
I got mine in the school library, and I was putting up books. I was like a helper, like an aide.
Oh.
And I was with Rachel, and I mentioned Rachel before. Uh-huh. She's like my childhood bestie.
What up, Rachel?
She was so mad at me that I got my period. I remember looking at her crying and go, well, you can have it if you want it.
Like, why did everybody think, like, ooh, you got your period?
Exactly.
Like, it's not.
And my mom wouldn't check me out. Like, I had to stay at school. I was traumatized. Childhood trauma.
I mean, I was also traumatized for mine. I mean, mm-hmm. I thought I had, you know,
dedicated
on myself.
Oh, my gosh. But it is cool to learn, like, that early development,
yeah.
almost like premature development, can lead to these behaviors.
So then also something that should probably be in place is that students who do go through this, there should be some type of
female conversations happening at school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So parents mm-hmm. notify your kids' teachers if they do
yeah.
get, you know, if their flower blossoms
exactly.
a little earlier. So we know and we can have those conversations with them.
Hey, it's normal. Like, we're cool. Like,
yeah.
it's all good.
It's all good.
Yeah. So what this meant for Jasmine was that, yes, she was 11 years old. She did not look 11. She went from pink walls and unicorns to black clothing, dark eyeliner, dog chains and collars,
oh.
and mini skirts.
Oh.
Keep in mind, she goes to a Catholic school.
Oh, she getting kicked out. Period.
She even changed her music taste from innocent to rock bands such as Korn, Slipknot, etc. I don't know if you've heard of those bands.
I've definitely heard of Slipknot. I've heard of Korn, but I definitely know Slipknot.
Yeah.
But I can't remember songs off the top of my head, but I've definitely heard of them.
Yeah. Very much headbanger mm-hmm. rock music. Yeah.
Yeah.
She said she was representing the goth culture.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to take a second and I'm going to talk that in no way throughout this case am I saying that goth lifestyle or goth culture or the goth community has anything to do with the tragedy that we're going to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
I have many kids right now that are finding themselves in the goth culture or are involved in the goth culture, and I do not think that that relates.
That's not a contributing
factor. It is
factor.
Not. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I do want to make that very known. I am not placing any blame on the goth community.
Yes.
Jasmine even made her appearance on social media at this time, 11 years old. Mm. Such as MySpace.
Okay.
Obviously.
Top eight. Let's go.
Nexopia.
What's that?
So I'd never heard of this one either. It's similar to MySpace.
Okay.
I guess it's a Canadian thing.
I would think.
It might be. Mm. I was never on it, so I didn't know. And Vampire Freaks.
That's social media? Or is that like a blog?
Well, it was social media, but it was like a fan club. I guess like I was a part of the Aaron Carter fan club. And you can like post on the wall and meet other Aaron Carter fans.
Okay. So all these people on this...
Vampire Freaks.
Vampire Freaks were vampires or enjoyed
vampires? They just freaks about vampires.
Okay, okay, sure. Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, to each its own, you know, rock out.
Exactly. Now... think about social media then, and, you know, social media did have age restrictions, right? So, like, when you signed up on MySpace, you had to be, I think at the time it was 16?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. She was only 11. So, throughout this whole case, please keep in mind this child is 11 years old.
Wait, she committed this crime at 11?
So, she was lying about her age. Clearly, to get on these social media sites, she checked a box and said, I verify that I am 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And I think social media needs to do a little bit better. I definitely think that social media then and now should have two-factor authentication. That's what I'm looking for. I think that definitely needs to be a thing. So... her online presence was seen as very odd and strange and even disturbing. Her screen names. Remember screen names?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Screen names. Jasmine's screen names were things like Runaway Devil.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And X.Killer.X.
Yeah, mine was Trini X Delight.
So I don't really remember mine, but I do remember Rachel's. Hers was Curly Sue.
Oh!
And I know. It was so funny. And screen names are like, we identified with those.
Yes, absolutely.
And we would memorize our friends' screen names.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, like Baseball Boy just signed on.
And Baseboy Boy.
Yeah.
Baseboy Boy.
So, like, these screen names held value to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but besides the screen names was her bio.
Oh, God.
It was weird. She described herself in her bio.
Okay.
11 years old.
Okay.
Nocturnal Wiccan with an interest in hatchets, serial killers, blood, the human body, and wait for it, kinky shit.
Ma'am, you're 11.
Exactly.
You need to be into book shit, okay? Yeah.
Or the unicorns. Go back to the unicorns.
Yes, go back to the pink room and the unicorns.
Yeah. She even wrote that she idolized Jeffrey Dahmer. Marilyn Manson and Chris Angels.
I mean, Chris Angel was just
he's just not an illusionist. Yeah. Like, I can get that one.
I mean, I like watching his videos. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do?
I can't make any sense out of the Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, no, he ate people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. A direct quote from her bio read, "Welcome to my tragic end." So she was like dark.
She was like dark.
Mm-hmm. Now, this change around this age is common, and yes, most God students I teach now or in the past have eventually left this stage of life, or they've embraced it, and they've remained, like, you know, goth, and they love the color black, and they like that lot, you know, they like that lifestyle, and they like that music, and they like that culture. But I asked one of my goth students that I currently have, just kind of, because she is very goth.
Yeah.
And I asked her, I was like, you know, I'm doing this case, and what I can't understand is, like, I look at you and you're super chill and, like, down to earth, and then I look at this case and that wasn't the fact. And she literally said, well, can I give you a direct quote of, like, what goth people think their souls are like? And
I was like, yes.
So one of my students said, goths have cat-like souls.
And cats are chill.
Chill. Super chill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, they listen to the heavy metal, but, like, just chilling.
Mm-hmm. They're chill.
So, I thought that was interesting that she described, you know, the goth culture like that.
That's definitely really cool. That's so cool.
So, here's, like, the amazing part to me. Her parents were not worried about this change. And they literally chalked it up as like a fad and a phase to them, a girl growing up and being a teenager.
Okay? Yeah, they were letting her embrace, you know.
Right, which is awesome parenting. Like, yes. You do you. We support you. Like, absolutely. If you want to be goth, be goth. We mm-hmm, got you. Mm-hmm. So her parents actually started letting her attend rock shows around town where she started meeting friends in the goth lifestyle. And although some of the girls she would go with were her age, she found herself among older people.
That was my next. I thought that because, like, how many 11-year-olds are right. really going to these concerts?
Mm-hmm. And by older, I mean they are above 18 years old.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So these, you know, she was meeting people that were also involved in this lifestyle, in this community, and into this music, etc. Now, this group of older people she was meeting mainly consisted of older men.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, Jasmine did not look
yeah.
like an 11-year-old.
Mm-hmm. She probably wasn't telling people she was 11 either.
Heck no! And she looked a lot older than she was. And keep in mind, her social media is minimum 16 years old.
Yep.
Okay. This, however, is where her parents drew the line. And they learned that she was hanging out with two guys in their 20s named Raven and Trenchcoat.
Was that the names put on their birth certificates?
I don't know. I giggled at the Trenchcoat name.
Yeah, like Raven, I can see.
I got it. I'm like,
all right, that's a Raven. Like, that's cool. But Trenchcoat?
Mm-hmm. Trenchcoat.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
So she was hanging out with these two guys, and they decided, no, this is enough. So they took a very fair parental approach, and they set some boundaries and limitations.
Which is normal for a parent
exactly.
to do.
Exactly. They did nothing that the average parent wouldn't have done. Mm-hmm. They were not excessive in their punishments. They weren't abusive. They mm-hmm. weren't outlandish.
Mm-hmm.
Normal parenting. However, as a teen, she didn't like this. And she began to fight back against the new rules and the punishment. It was becoming a regular occurrence that Jasmine would get in trouble at school. And remember, she attends a private Catholic school.
Yeah, and they don't tolerate stuff.
Very strict rules.
Yeah.
Very strict rules. They were growing very concerned at how short her skirts had gotten. They wear uniforms. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, this girl is now wearing dog chains and like a lot of makeup.
It probably made everybody clutch their pearls.
Uh-huh. The chains, like the dog chains, she would even draw with a marker on her arm. Pentagrams and satanic symbols.
Oh, girl. Okay.
This behavior was so frequent, in fact, that the counselor had gathered a growing file on Jasmine. So counselor's doing her job.
Yeah.
She's got a stack of documents.
Documenting everything. Yep. Yeah.
Exactly.
Kudos to you.
And it comes in handy later on. Jasmine often tried to get herself sent into foster care.
What?
Yes. She would literally go to the counselor and be like, I want to be put in foster care. And the counselor would be like, are your parents abusing you? And she said, no, I just don't like them.
I wonder how, like I get that you have embraced this new goth culture, but, like, at what point did you, like, you used to love your parents and,
yeah,
like, at what point was it just like, nah, you know what I mean?
She said, and I quote to the counselor, they're assholes. That's why you want to be put in the system. Go find a kid that is in the system and ask them how they like it and just reevaluate your thinking.
Seriously.
Because kids would have killed to have your home life.
Yeah, and they're literally doing what parents do, setting boundaries because they don't like the path that you're going down. They're not telling you, look, you can't wear these dog chains, you can't do all this stuff, but you are going to be respectful and follow our rules.
Yeah. We feed you.
Yeah.
We buy the dog chains.
Yeah, because you ain't got no money, you 11.
Exactly. So this obviously, like, put tension on the relationship between the parents and Jasmine.
Yeah.
And the counselor even said, like, she did, like, an interview, and she mentioned, she said, had I really thought something was going on, I definitely would have investigated. She said, but I knew in my gut there was nothing going on in this household. She is being dramatic.
Yeah.
So the whole situation escalated even more when Jasmine met Jeremy Steinke. Steinke.
Not Jeremy.
So if you don't know what I'm about to say, let me just go ahead and tell you. He was 23 years old.
That's automatically red. Granted, here's the thing. He probably didn't know that she was 11 because she's out here lying about her age. So I don't know what age she is portraying herself to be. But even if she's saying, I'm 16,
yeah,
you're 16, he is 23.
Even if she's saying that she's 16, you still should not even be speaking to
absolutely
her.
Not. She is... Not I don't want to say a child, but she's a child.
And you're supposed to be an adult.
And you're grown. You can't find people your age.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Sus.
So let's do some background on Jeremy, because he's definitely an important role into this case. And I just want to start by saying, yep, Jeremy was a very, very troubled kid. Unlike Jasmine, Jeremy had a very hard upbringing. And Ashley, when I mean like it was rough, it was rough.
Mm-hmm.
Both of his parents were alcoholics, and allegedly his father was very abusive towards Jeremy. Later, his father abandoned the family completely, but the house did not go without a male presence. His mother replaced his father with many other abusive men throughout the years. Mm. His second stepfather was the worst type of human. Jeremy said, and I quote, "He had a tendency to abuse me and my siblings physically and mentally.
Oh.
He'd tie us up to chairs and make us watch the other children get hit as well." Jeremy stated that punishment came in many forms, but that the kids would often be slapped on the back of the hands with paint sticks until they told the, and I do air quotes, truth.
Which means they just said what he wanted them to say.
Right. Then came along stepfather number three, and this POS, and that's all I'm going to say, was no better. For example, during one of the arguments between Jeremy and his stepfather number three, Jeremy's head was slammed into a deep freezer, causing serious injury.
Oh, no.
However, with this husband, it wasn't just the kids that were now being abused, but Jeremy's mother as well. One particular night, the couple got into a fight. Jeremy stepped in to help his mother, which ended in him being the one taking all the blows. His mother would move them from town to town, so this feeling of being settled was very unfamiliar to Jeremy. Like, he was constantly bouncing around. Yeah. And because of this, you know, he had to change schools.
Mm-hmm.
And a school for a kid like this is supposed to be a safe haven.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to guarantee 2 meals a day, minimum. They're going to get good teachers that are should show love and kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And there should be some, you know, structure and just normalcy in a school building.
Yeah, and then socializing with peers to find friends and things of that nature.
Right. This was not the case for Jeremy. Jeremy was bullied at school immensely. His peers referred to him as Jeremy Stinky.
Oh.
And made fun of his living situation.
It's horrible. People are so cruel.
They are. I mean, Jeremy's a crap human
being. Yeah, 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 absolutely. But still bullying, like, come on, let's be kinder people.
Could this have been avoided if he had not been bullied and accepted? You know, you got to think about those things. Jeremy was also diagnosed with ADHD, which was a huge, this was a big contributing factor to his poor performance in school.
Yeah.
Due to the obvious symptoms, some psychiatrists believe that Jeremy was actually born with fetal alcohol syndrome.
Oh.
I mean, keep in mind, his mother was an alcoholic.
Yes.
And the signs of this were the fact that he was very immature for his age. And I mean, like, more than the average teen boy.
Oh, so that would probably explain why he gravitated towards Jasmine.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy even took on this persona. Ready for it?
Yeah.
He was a 300-year-old werewolf.
Nah, bro. I know this story. And when you get to it, I'm going to be like, that's the story. I've heard his name is so familiar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he would, like, go to school and, like, claim to be this 300-year-old werewolf who was a part of a likened brotherhood whose empire would one day conquer and rise again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. To Jacob from Twilight.
Maybe these books were out then, and that's, like, what he was, like, going for.
Maybe.
So he took on this persona so much that he would often threaten to eat people when they bullied him.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
And like his parents, the apple didn't fall far from the tree, and he began drinking at a very, very early age and experimenting with drugs such as weed, cocaine, ecstasy, and all of this got worse over time.
Oh,
at the age of only 15, he was sent to the hospital for hypothermia after getting blackout drunk and passing out in the freezing cold.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
And it gets cold in Canada.
Like, freezing.
It gets cold there.
I know. Jeremy was also a self-harmer, so some of my sources believed that the passing out drunk in the cold was a suicide attempt, but some just think he got that drunk.
Yeah.
So people believed that it was a suicide attempt because he was a known self-harmer.
Yeah.
And then some people were like, no, he just had a drug and alcohol problem.
But was he a self-harmer, like self-harmer trying to commit suicide or just doing self-harm to ease the pain?
I think it more was to ease the pain.
Okay.
But then you're a self-harmer, so people sometimes
associate that.
Yes, they
do. I understand.
And he just, you know, he talked about how, like, he would self-harm because he didn't like the cards that were stacked against him mm-hmm. and the cards that he was dealt in life. And, you know, a lot of us don't like the cards that we were dealt in life, but you make the best of it and yes. you try to do better.
You try and better yourself so you can get out of that situation. Exactly. And then you can reflect and see, like, look at where I came from and look at where I am.
Exactly. So by the 10th grade, he chose to drop out of school and move out from under his mother. He would work bottom tier jobs to escape and, like, make ends meet. But he was very young. I mean, 10th grade, you're 16, maybe 15, 15 to 16.
Mm-hmm. And this takes us back to the De'Asia Page exactly. case when we said if there was some sort of counseling in place, like, if you want to drop out, cool. Let's make a plan. Let's figure it mm-hmm. out. And let's see.
Let us help you get a good job.
Yeah, because it seems like you're just winging it right mm-hmm. now.
Exactly. And this became a lot for Jeremy to handle on his own, as it would. 15, 16-year-old on his own working dead-end jobs?
Yeah.
So he was forced to move back to his mother's house. At 22, like Jasmine at 11, he decided, I'm done with this being the bullied person. I'm going to change my whole vibe. So okay. Jasmine decided to go into the goth community at 11.
Yes.
Jeremy entered into the goth community at 22.
Okay.
Okay. So he took on the goth lifestyle, look, and the culture. He was wearing all black, black makeup, along with a vial of blood around his neck.
I know this case because in my head I'm like, is this the kid with the blood? This is the kid with the blood.
This is the kid with the blood. Among this group of the, like, goth community, he was finding normalcy. He was actually, like, popular.
Oh, so these were his people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, people actually liked being around him in this community. So, you know, someone that went from being bullied to now being accepted, he's like, hell yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm the man.
Yeah.
Okay.
He found extreme popularity among the underaged girls.
That's probably because he acted like an underaged boy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The developmental issues, mm-hmm. yeah. He was often described as being really chill, kind, and generous. Now, his aesthetic and age played a big part in this because underage girls, what do they want? They want a ride and they want booze.
Yep.
What can you offer? A ride and booze.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this all played into a factor. However, in January of 2006, Jasmine and her friend, who was a 13-year-old habitual runaway.
Okay.
Yeah. Great friends. Mm-mm. Attended a local show where Jeremy happened to be. Jasmine's friend that she was with at the time knew Jeremy and thought, hey, these two would get along and hit it off. So mm-hmm. she introduced them.
Okay.
And she was right. The night they met, they ended up spending the whole night hanging out, talking, and having a good time. They okay. even exchanged numbers and screen names.
Ooh, what's hers? Ex Devil Worshipper 75 or something like that?
Exactly. So they could keep in touch. From there, Jasmine claims that their love just emerged, and the two officially started dating on February 14th.
Not on How Valentine's romantic. Day.
In 2006, over an email.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Hey, baby, we don't need my vampire queen. You trying to be my vampire king? Yay.
Yay. You can be a werewolf if I bite you. I cannot with these two. Like.
Wow.
A few days later, they had their first real date at another local concert.
Oh.
Their relationship. So, their relationship, if you even want to call it that, was a secret.
Okay.
I mean, he's 23, she's 11.
Yeah, and she's probably telling him that she's older, but still, it's like, still sus.
You're a grown man dating a child. And this relationship survived solely off phone calls and online chatting. He would, this is disgusting, ew. He would sing her songs that he wrote.
Oh my God, tell me you have a clip.
I don't have
you ain't got no words.
Him singing, but like, I can't imagine James, like, singing to me about vampires and werewolves.
Because I'm like a vampire, I'm a bite you. Because that's a werewolf, I don't know.
I can't.
I don't know, something like that.
And Jasmine said, and I quote, I felt really flattered and loved. He was really romantic. He told me he loved me all the time, and I was falling in love with him, too.
Mm.
Now, at this age, a teen doesn't actually feel what you and I know as love. Yeah. Teens often confuse their obsession and lust with love because it's an overwhelming feeling at this age. Mm-hmm. And they can't really label it, so they just say, this is love.
Yeah.
This actually isn't my opinion. Shocker. This comes from a psychiatrist by the name of Congit Farrell. She's from the Crazy in Love podcast, and she's a psychologist, and she's studied, like, teens that have done these things.
Oh,
and,
that's
like,
dope.
Yeah. So the two continued to date in secret until Jasmine was eventually grounded. And she was grounded not because of Jeremy, actually. She was grounded because one night her parents wanted to go out, and she was told, hey, you have to babysit your brother. Well, she decided, no, I don't really feel like staying here. She left the house with her friend to go to the gas station, and she left her 8-year-old brother alone.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Her brother obviously called his parents and, like, was freaking out. Mm-hmm. He's in this house by himself.
Yes, that's scary.
And this resulted in Jasmine being grounded. When I think grounded, I think you've lost all privileges.
Yeah. Can't go nowhere. She, you go to school, you come home.
Did not lose her online privileges, though. Mm. So she could still, like, correspond with Jeremy online.
Did her parents know about her online presence or no?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So she could, like, still talk to him online and stuff. Mm-hmm. This is where things, like, took a turn for the worse. And this is where conversations that were once lovey-dovey, sweet, and mushy-gushy disgusting, because she's 11.
About werewolves and vampires.
Now became dark and twisted.
Oh, no.
Okay. One message from Soul Eater, which was Jeremy's screen name. After Jasmine had snuck out to see him. So he emailed her, like, after she returned home.
Okay.
You are a sight for sore eyes, and I miss you more than killing people.
Oh.
Can we get together and kill people together?
Oh.
Jasmine responded with, and I quote, killing people sounds like fun, and yes, we shall. I miss you too, a large amount. That cannot be contained in mere words. I love you. Yeah.
This makes me uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable. During this same month, all these dark exchanges, Jeremy gifted Jasmine with a vial of his own blood.
Oh, baby.
Yeah.
Here you go, my vampire queen.
Here's my blood. This new attitude and lifestyle has now sparked a suspicion in her parents. So her parents are now, like, kind of realizing, like, what's going on.
Yeah.
So they decided to look at her online activity.
Let's go, parents.
To get answers. Again, they're doing nothing that a normal parent wouldn't do. Mm-hmm. They found her disturbing chats and exchanges with strangers, thus leading them to take her internet privileges away.
Very nice.
And as a possible solution, Mark and Deborah decided the family should attend family therapy.
Okay.
Exactly.
Hashtag mental health. Let's go.
Right. To try to help understand Jasmine better. This was helping, and they attended actually several weeks, and they started to notice a really big change in Jasmine.
Oh,
they,
good.
Like, felt like they were getting their daughter back.
Mm-hmm.
So as a reward, they allowed her to go to one of the upcoming rock shows, but there was a catch. Her parents had to accompany her.
Okay, very nice.
The fact that your parents will go to a rock show with you is cool beans.
Yeah. I mean, that you might think they're cramping your style or whatever, but, like, how cool is it that your parents are not only letting you go, but they're taking you. So they're experiencing the things that you love, which in turn could, like, strengthen your relationship.
Right. Exactly. Jasmine wanted to go so badly that obviously she agreed to this. She's like, yeah, come on, let's go.
Uh-huh.
During the show, Jasmine snuck away and lost Mark and Deborah. Well, they took off to find her. That's one of the rules. Like, you gotta, yeah, you can be here. They found her in the alleyway making out with Jeremy. I don't know Mark, but I do know Mel Dozier.
Daddy Dozier.
And I know he would have thrown hands with this grown man. Grown man.
Like, no.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
That is bad news bears. Mm-mm.
Yes. So, she was grounded again, and she lost all communication with Jeremy.
Rightfully so.
Exactly. This, however, did not prevent the two and their so-called love. And I say so-called, I'm not calling this love. This is disgusting.
Just call it infatuation at this point.
Yeah. Jasmine was now sneaking out more to see Jeremy and also began a physical relationship with him.
No.
Meaning Jeremy is basically committing rape.
Yes.
You are raping a child.
Yes.
Jasmine became more enraged with her parents as time went on, and she would vent to her friends about how her parents were keeping her from the love of her life.
But they weren't, because you were still sneaking out to see him and have sex with him.
At 11. 11.
That is so disgusting.
So, here's my opinion at this point. I think that this obviously, Jeremy does have some, like, development issues, yes. like, mentally, but, like, he was grooming her.
Absolutely.
A teen is so impressionable. You cannot tell me that you were not in some form or fashion grooming her to yes. be what you wanted her to be.
Yes.
Okay. So her friends at school, go friends, kudos to you friends, did not agree with Jasmine.
Yes, girl.
They told her that Jeremy was a creep and her friends did not support the relationship.
Very
whatsoever.
Good, friends. Very good.
Yeah. Jeremy also began venting to his friends. And his friends also said things like, and I quote, well, it's weird, man.
I mean, it is. I just want to know how old he thought she was.
He thought she was 16.
Oh, and still weird.
Weird. Weird. So no one actually condoned their relationship. Like,
except
on
for
both
them.
On both sides. Yeah. Jasmine and Jeremy did not care what anyone thought. And she was obsessed with him and began using the library computers in order to talk to him. During one of the email chats, she sent the email. It is that email. It's like that moment that broke the case. Like, this is the email, mm-hmm. okay, that rolled this case into the thing that it is. She sent this on March 20th, 2006. Okay. Jasmine wrote, so I have this plan. It begins with me killing them and ends with you, me living with you. So are we set? I'm going to try to call you, but I really don't know if I will be able to. They're treating me like shit. I hate them so much, but I hope this won't bring us apart. I hope to talk to you soon. Love you with all my heart. Wow. So keep in mind, Jasmine, throughout this whole thing, I want you to keep in mind, Jasmine's the first one that introduced the idea of this plot.
She's the aggressor.
Okay. The next day, Jeremy responded with an email that said, well, I love your plan. But we need to get a little more creative with, like, details and stuff. I wish they wouldn't treat you that way. Grr.
Okay, werewolf man.
It angers me to hear that. I dislike them very much. Don't worry. I love you too, my sexy beast. I hope to hear from you soon too. Take care, my love. You have the key to my heart, and soon enough, you shall have my heart. If I die, because if I give it to you now, I die, and you won't be able to hear how much I love you. I want to point out the grammar. I didn't change a thing. That's his education level.
Yikes.
So, like,
I mean, he did drop out of school.
Just that was the grammatical email.
That's trash.
Okay.
As a reading teacher, I'm appalled.
I know.
I'm appalled.
Yeah. And for all of you listening, we have Kristen sitting across from us, and she's an English teacher, too, and she's like, cringe.
Like, yikes.
So, it was with those emails, the fate of her family was set in motion.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't like the way that this is going.
Jasmine and Jeremy began plotting their intentions. A few days later, after those emails, Jeremy posted on one of his profiles, so like either MySpace, Nextopia, or VampireLoverFreaks.com.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, posted a status, and I quote, my girlfriend's family are totally unfair. They say that they really care. They don't know what is going on. They just assume as their greed continues to consume. I guess he a poet or something. I don't know.
I guess.
She is slowly going insane. She continues to think that I came into her life to help her out and stop what they keep trying to shout. It's all bullshit. Their throats I want to slit. They will regret the shit they have done, especially when I see to it they are gone. They shall pay for their insolence. Finally, there will be silence. Their blood shall be payment.
So did anyone report this status? Because I know if I'm scrolling and I see a status like that,
mm-hmm.
I am reporting it.
I saw a TikTok the other day and a girl had a nip slip and I reported it.
Like,
I'm sorry.
Like, this seems like real. It doesn't seem like for play.
Right.
You know what I mean?
This isn't a joke.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You're talking about your girlfriend. You're talking about how unhappy she is and how you're going to spread her family's blood.
Yeah.
Like,
on social media.
Yeah.
For the world to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing no one reported it. Okay,
no.
Cool. Mm-mm. Cool, cool, cool.
So, and with that, with what you're saying, no one reported it. The couple was not trying to hide their plan at all, mm-hmm. online or in person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And this is only like after a month, a little over a month of dating, right? Because yeah. you said they started dating on Valentine's Day mm-hmm. and she sent that email in March. Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we're in love after 2 weeks.
Mm, just like yep. Deja Page.
Yep. So they were basically, literally, I kid you not, going around and telling their friends about their plot to kill. And strangely, everyone just thought it was a joke. And
you don't joke about killing people.
I understand that. And no one reported it because no one took them seriously. Jasmine would practically beg him every day that if he loved her, he would just go ahead and do it. But Jeremy was actually having a hard time, according to his friends. In April, so now 2 months, in April, Jeremy met up with a friend named Grant who claimed their conversation was really odd.
Okay.
Jeremy asked him while getting high, how far would he be willing to go for love? And said, and I quote, Jasmine is pretty much going to break up with me if I don't do this soon. I don't think I can do this by myself. I need someone I can trust. You in?
And he's literally telling him, like, are you going to help me kill her parents?
Right.
Okay.
Asking his friend.
Okay.
But Grant just played it off as a joke and said, like, well, we were high. I didn't think he was being serious.
Yeah.
And didn't give him much thought after that. Like, just told him no, obviously, was like, no. And just choked it up as,
yeah,
we're high. He didn't think Jeremy was capable of those types of things. Jeremy's online presence continued, and in one post on MySpace, he wrote in response to a friend's post. So, like, a friend had posted about, like, hitting himself to stay awake or something like that. His friend, like, was like, I gotta hit myself to stay awake.
Okay.
Jeremy commented under that and said, oh, yeah, LOL. Hope you enjoy hitting yourself. I, on the other hand, would rather do morbid stuff to others like Jazz's rinse, for example, which I'm going to do this weekend.
What?
Mm-hmm.
And still no one's like, hey, man.
Yeah.
No one's like, hey, he doing some crazy things.
911.
He being really stanky.
Yeah.
You know?
Stanky.
He being stanky.
After this post, it was one day before Jasmine and Jeremy would put their plan into action. One day after posting that. So he was serious. This goes back. If you see something, say something,
if
folks.
If you see it, say it.
On Saturday, April 22nd, 2006, the Richardsons spent, this breaks my heart, the day in the backyard as a family cooking barbecue. A normal family.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Just a regular day.
Yeah. While Jeremy, Stinky, spent the day getting wasted from the floor up.
And it was probably for courage because he sounded like a punk.
I'm with you. And I honestly, I'll get to that. I'm going to bring that up because I feel like we're on the same wavelength.
I mean, he was already telling his friends, like, I can't do this by myself. I don't know if I could do it. And now the day mm-hmm. of you're getting plastered, it's yep. absolutely liquid yep. or high courage or whatever.
Oh, it's a combination of both. You ready for all this?
Oh, great.
He bought a 12-pack of beer and weed that morning.
Okay.
Then headed home where he drank all the beer on top of whatever beer his mom had in the house because okay. she's an alcoholic.
Yes.
But he didn't stop there. After he was done with his beer, his mother's beer, he then drank a bottle of vodka.
A bottle?
Mm-hmm. And proceeds to drive around until 9 p.m. where he goes to his friend's house to try to convince him to help in the murder.
His friend Grant?
Not a different one.
Okay.
But this friend, I do know, and I'm not going to say the friend's name, but this friend was avoiding Jeremy all day. Like, Jeremy had been calling and calling and calling, and this friend's also the dealer, like, Jeremy's dealer,
mm-hmm.
and was like, he's getting on my nerves.
Yeah.
Like, and then Jeremy shows up.
Yeah.
His friend said no, and that this wasn't the first time he had been asked. The friend said that he wasn't capable of killing anyone and wanted Jeremy to leave the house.
Okay.
Jeremy went back home and put on a movie with another friend. This movie was Natural Born Killers. Have you seen it?
No.
I haven't either, so I looked it up. Okay. This movie is about a couple.
Okay.
And this couple plots to kill the girlfriend's family.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seems pretty coincidental.
Yeah. Jeremy said it was the greatest love story of all time.
Jeremy.
And personally, he felt like it related to him and Jasmine. The storyline was an inspiration for the Wicked couple. So, like, they watched this movie together as a couple, and, like, this was, like...
So, this is how they got their plan.
Right. However, in the movie, they spare the girlfriend's little brother after murdering the family. Jeremy then looks at his friend and says, this is where our story is different. Jasmine wants to kill her brother, too.
Why would you want to kill him, too? He is innocent. Granted, why would you want to kill any of them? Yeah. But your brother literally has nothing to do with this.
Exactly. His friend again brushed it off as something Jeremy just said commonly while high and drunk.
No, if he's saying it multiple times when he's high and drunk, you need to start taking him seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, period.
So they didn't press the issue. And at 3 a.m., he needed more drugs. But this time, he needed white courage, the cocaine, to help build that motivation and hype. At the dealer's house, he reportedly, my sources said, did 6 lines of cocaine.
Here's the thing. How is he still functioning?
Thank you.
He is drinking, smoking, snorting. Sir, you should be taking a nap.
He then consumed more vodka and consumed a bottle of Vampire brand wine. What the heck is that? I don't know.
They probably discontinued now.
Yeah. This was before he left for Jasmine's home. He arrived at Jasmine's home.
He drove there?
Yeah, he drove.
Okay.
He drove.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and nobody pulled him over. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So he arrived at 4 a.m. And somewhere in that time frame, he did. I don't know grams and ounces and all of that, mm-hmm. but the sources said he did 8 grams of cocaine.
That seems like a lot.
A lot, yeah.
Especially if you did 6 lines before you drinking. He's probably like on some like super sane type level.
Mm-hmm. So he's done more cocaine at this point.
That's horrible.
He let her know that he was there by throwing a pine cone at her window. Ooh, Romeo and Juliet style, I guess.
I'm here.
Yeah. So Jasmine went down to the basement and let him through the basement window. Keep in mind, this man is tore up and he's having to climb through a window.
Did he fall through the window?
Okay. So his entry wasn't very quiet, clearly. The noise woke up Deborah.
No, Debs.
Mm-hmm.
No, Debs.
Who just assumed that Jasmine was trying to sneak out of her house again.
Mm-hmm, because she's notorious for doing that.
Correct. So Deborah went downstairs to try to, like, stop Jasmine. Like, that's what she thought was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of finding Jasmine, she saw a stranger wearing a black mask, fishnet arm stockings, and a black bandana. He was armed with a butcher's knife.
Oh,
he began immediately slashing towards her in, like, what I picture is, like, a manic, like, slashing motion.
And was probably missing.
Right. He was.
Okay.
So this caused her to react, scream, and throw up her arms in a defensive motion.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy then changed, like, how he was trying to attack her and stabbed her, like, straight in the chest close to 12 times.
Oh, my God.
Around the torso region.
And Jasmine's down here, right?
No, Jasmine's not downstairs. Jasmine let him in, went upstairs.
Got you.
So all of this noise woke up Mark. So out of concern and fear, he went to see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
He was armed with a screwdriver. Like, I guess he picked it up on the way.
Okay.
But saving Deborah, unfortunately, was out of the question at this point.
No.
She was dead when he made it down the stairs.
Deb.
Yeah. Jeremy was not expecting to see Mark, and it caught him very, very off guard.
Mm-hmm.
He said later in a comment, and I quote, "He came at me real fast. I was scared shitless."
Who said that?
Jeremy. "I thought I was going down. I went back up, and I tripped and fell, and he jumped on me and attempted to stab me in the chest."
Yes, let's go.
"He grabbed my face and shoved his thumbs in my eyes."
Yes.
So, like, he, but he's saying this quote as if, like, he was the one attacked.
Yeah, like, sir, you deserved everything you received.
I 100% agree. Jeremy was able to deflect, like, this attack and, like, began stabbing Mark.
Ugh.
Mark was a fighter, and he refused to give up. Mark continued, like, so Mark is on top of Jeremy.
Yes.
Choking him.
Mm.
But Jeremy was
stabbing him
upwards.
Okay.
Okay. The police said that Mark fought with everything he had and not once gave up. When Mark realized this was the end, he asked Jeremy in his face, "Why?" And Jeremy responded, and I quote, "Because you treat your daughter like shit. It's what your daughter wanted."
Imagine that being the last thing you heard before you died.
Yes.
That is horrible.
Once the two were dead, Jeremy headed up to the kitchen where Jasmine was, and she proceeded to, like, confess her love to him. And, like, kissing on him and, like, all of these things.
And he's probably covered in her parents' blood.
Then she headed to her brother's room, Jasmine.
No.
Jeremy followed up the stairs shortly after where she heard the two of them talking. Jacob, her brother, panicked, asked Jasmine what was happening while quivering in the corner of his bed.
Oh, baby.
Jasmine told him, and I quote, shh, go to sleep. While holding her brother in his, like her brother was in her lap, Jasmine put her arms around his head and began squeezing, attempting to choke him out.
Mm-mm.
Jacob broke free
and
was confused, asking what she was doing before running into the hallway. That is where he met Jeremy, who was coming up the stairs covered in blood.
Mm-mm.
Jacob said to them both, and I quote, I'm scared. I'm too young to die. But they couldn't let him live because Jasmine said he wasn't strong enough to be an orphan. He fought hard against the two, but he was stabbed to death. And this is where the two go back and forth, like in their interrogation later, and they blame one another. So obviously Jeremy says like he did it, like she did it. And then Jasmine says that Jeremy did it. Jasmine and Jeremy then rinsed off the knives, left them on the counter, and Jasmine went upstairs to grab her bag that she had already packed and her mother's purse. While this was going on, Jeremy had gone outside to get air. When Jasmine went outside to find Jeremy, he had left her. Like, left her out of fear to go home and shower off what he did.
Mm-mm.
At 5:25 a.m., Jasmine had called a cab to Jeremy's house where they began to dispose of the evidence around, like, dumpsters and stuff.
So you didn't take this as a red flag. Like, that your man's left.
Left
like,
you.
Like, your man's left you.
Freaking out. Left you.
And you were like, you know what? I'm just going to get a taxi. He just probably was going up ahead.
Yeah. Once done with that, they decided, okay, we're safe. And they went to a party.
What?
Yeah. So this is happening at 5 a.m. So the party kind of conflicts. It's like the next night, like that they feel safe.
Okay.
Kind of situation.
But like, y'all are still in the same area?
Yeah.
And then she's missing. So like.
Yes. So people at the party said that the couple were all smiles and full of laughter that night. During the party.
Mm-mm.
They spent the whole night all over each other.
Mm-mm.
Like, groping each Mm-mm. other. James, a partygoer, was the first person that Jeremy confided in about what they had done. Jeremy told him, and I quote, we killed my girlfriend's family last night. I gutted them like a fish.
And what did he think they were? He was kidding again?
James claimed it was a normal, in-tone conversation, like they could have been talking about the weather. Jasmine then added to the conversation, and I wrote here, I didn't want to repeat what she said, but I am going to say it, and this comes up later, like, this quote is evidence that Jasmine was the one that killed her brother.
Uh-huh.
She said, he gargled.
Not you describing your brother dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not he gargled. That is horrible.
Horrible. However, while all of this was going on, their actions were being discovered on April 23rd. So again, they committed the murders. They disposed of all the evidence at 5 a.m. The next day, the bodies were found. That party was that night.
Okay.
Okay. It was the next door neighbor and a friend of Jacob's that had had a play date scheduled for that day.
No. Tell me this baby didn't find
who found the bodies. The two were supposed to have a sleepover the night before, the night of the murders.
No.
But the friend got offered to go to a hockey game, and so they rescheduled.
Oh, thank goodness. But, oh.
Exactly. When the boy returned home quickly, his mother asked why, and he replied, and I quote, Mommy, there's bodies at Jacob's house with blood on them. I saw them through the basement window. Yeah. The mom wasn't sure if he was telling the truth, so she went and checked, and sure enough, the boy was right. The mom of the boy called 911, and at 1 p.m., the bodies were properly identified. One of the officers working the case said, I'm an ex-military guy. I've seen some bad stuff before, but this was the worst crime I'd ever been in.
Oh my gosh.
During the search of the crime scene, they found a family photo where Jasmine was pictured, mm-hmm. like in the family photo, where they thought she was also a victim that had possibly been kidnapped from the home.
Naturally.
Yes. So they didn't think that she was involved. Mm-hmm. So they revealed to the media that they were looking for Jasmine in regards to a serious family matter. They put out an Amber Alert for the, at the time, now 12. So yeah. She's turned 12. But this was a very hasty decision. And as they continued to search the home, they found in Jasmine's room a blood smear on the light switch.
Okay.
Do you know why this would be important?
Fingerprints?
No.
DNA?
I thought the same thing, but this actually made a lot of sense. This was key evidence because most robbers and kidnappers don't turn the lights on when they're committing the crime. Only someone living in the house would have done that. The police also could tell that at least two people were involved in this horrific murder of Deborah, Mark, and Jacob. Police were still looking for Jasmine, called Jasmine's school. So the school's now involved, and spoke with
the guidance counselor.
The guidance counselor.
And she had all this evidence. Like, pull up a seat.
Yep.
It's going to take a while.
So they called her and they're like, hey, we need more information about her to help in this search. Like, mm-hmm. we're looking for her. Mm-hmm. The guidance counselor then explained that Jasmine was a very troubled girl and offered to look in her locker for possible clues or evidence. So this was really interesting and I didn't know this either. And I checked this stat with our counselor. Legally, police could not check that locker without a warrant.
Okay.
Okay. But a counselor has legal grounds to do so.
Oh, so they were just standing there and she was going through it.
Oh, yeah. She offered. During this search, a very disturbing picture was found. So I'm going to show Ashley the picture now and, like, let her describe it to you.
Okay. All right. So it looks like a comic drawing and there are two adults and it looks like a little kid. And they're going for a walk and someone is putting gasoline into the sprinklers. And while they're doing it, they're saying, "Mwahaha!" And then everybody's playing in the sprinklers. And then somebody lights the match and they all go up in flames. And they're saying, "We're covered in gasoline." And they're yelling that they're burning alive. And it says, "Help, help, my flesh is burning." Oh, yeah. My God.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. This is so... And the one person is running on fire. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, baby.
So, what... this dumb girl. Like, she's smart, but she's dumb.
Uh-huh.
The truck in the drawing, I don't know if you noticed it, was labeled Jeremy's truck. Yeah. So, immediately, Jasmine went from, oh, no, this poor girl, to this girl.
Yes.
You know. And at 12 and a half years old, Jasmine officially became the youngest person to be charged with homicide in Canada.
In the first degree, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Amber Alerts turned to Amber Alerts quickly turned to wanted posters, yeah. And the hunt was on.
Yeah.
Her face was all over the news. This kind of attention prompted some of the couple's friends, mainly the two guys that Jeremy had, like, confided in.
Yes.
To go to the police and explain that Jasmine wasn't alone in the crime.
Okay.
By 7 p.m. that night, the news had the murder posted everywhere, and the couple began to worry.
As you should have been worrying.
Right.
Are they still in the area?
Yes. First of all, you had a full day. You've had a full day.
And you decided to go to a party.
Mm-hmm. While this was happening, the two were hanging out with a mutual friend. It's to be noted, it's the girl that possibly introduced them.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Who at the time was completely unaware of the news. Mm-hmm. So I had no idea. The friend had invited them and two others on a road trip. With nothing else better to do and nowhere to go, Jeremy and Jasmine decided to go.
Yes.
So they laid down in the back of a truck and away they went. But they weren't as safe as they thought. Wanted posters were all over Canada. Among talking with friends, police gauged that the couple might be headed towards Leader. So that's also in Canada.
Okay.
And they put that area on high alert. However, one rookie officer, like brand new to the force,
uh-huh.
rookie officer decided that, like, if they were coming into Leader, like, that area, they would have to, from where they started to Leader, they would have to get
gas. There was only one way in.
Yeah, and they would have to get gas.
Okay.
So he posted up at the largest gas station in that town. Like,
let's
that area.
Go, rookie cop.
Yes. Right. And he wasn't wrong. A pickup matching the description pulled in, and he began watching them. It had been, it had been 2 days at this time since the murders had happened.
Okay.
Okay. And the friends were still clueless, like had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
The girls, not Jasmine, the other girls, got out of the truck and went into the store when they saw the wanted poster, the newspaper with Jasmine's face on it.
Uh-huh.
They were shocked. But you know what? Instead of grabbing the newspaper and sprinting out the door, they were like, oh, let's get our Cokes. Let's get our snacks.
Like, oh, that's our friend. You thirsty?
Yeah. So they took the paper with them after checking out and getting their Cokes and stuff. And they showed this paper to Jasmine and Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
And they both laughed. Jasmine stated that the picture they used didn't even look like her.
Your friends knew it was you, sis. So it did look like you.
And they didn't even try to deny it to their friends. The friends really didn't know, like, what to do. So they drove to a nearby high school to, like, figure out a plan.
Okay.
But backup had been called, and, you know, the cop followed them to the high school.
Yeah.
The police ambushed them, and the girls were cuffed and put into one car while Jeremy was put into another.
Okay.
The other girls were eventually let go because they, you know,
they
were
genuinely didn't know.
They
anything.
Didn't know. But in the back of the cop car, sources say that the girls weren't even concerned about the murders. They were concerned that Jeremy was going to be charged with rape because when they found them, Jasmine was in the back of the truck with Jeremy with her pants off. And that was their concern. Not the murders.
I'm sorry.
That Jeremy was going to be charged with rape.
The three people are dead and you care about your boyfriend, your werewolf boyfriend, being charged with rape. He's going to be charged with murder too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So these girls really weren't as innocent. Like
yeah.
Jasmine was placed in a holding cell and they began interrogating her on April 25th at 10 a.m. But under Canada's Youth Justice Act, Jasmine had certain rights and protections being an underage offender.
Okay.
One of these rights is that an underage suspect has to sign a piece of paper every time before investigators can speak to them. Every single time. They also have to have read to them a special youth waiver / caution form. This is because children can be easily influenced by authority and are more inclined to, like, make false statements.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So all of these things go into place to, like, protect the children.
Yeah.
So during the first round of questioning, an investigator tried to reason with her, which didn't work. And she cried, but the investigator got nowhere. So a younger investigator had an idea. He would act more like a peer rather than like an authority figure.
Okay, so she would kind of like be more likely to confide in them.
Right.
Okay.
And this actually worked. She started talking and gave several accounts about the night of the murders that eliminated her for being responsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But with some added pressure, she broke and eventually told the truth. She told what she did to her brother and said, "I went into his bedroom to try and calm him down. Jeremy came upstairs and he began to say, we need to kill him. We can't just leave him. I had a knife and was just really having a hard time. He was really pressuring me. I stabbed him in the chest. Mm. I slipped or something and I couldn't do it. I was trying to wash it off of me." So this is her pointing the blame
on Jeremy.
So they asked who finished the job and she, of course, said
Jeremy.
Jasmine said the plan was not to kill Jacob, but she didn't want him to suffer. But he wouldn't have made it on his own. And I feel like that was a bold thing to say about your brother. Like, give him a chance to make it on
his own. Exactly. You didn't give him the opportunity to try and make it on his own. Kids are very resilient.
So, here is where the police got smart.
Oh.
They suggested that Jasmine write a letter to her parents expressing how sorry she was. And Jasmine agreed. What do you think this letter is?
"You guys are horrible. You're horrible human beings. You made me do this. You deserved it. Me and Jeremy love each other. We're going to be together forever and ever."
But you got to think, she's writing this on paper. It's a written confession.
Yes.
That's their tactic. Here's what the letter said. "Dear my loverly parental units."
Oh, no. Already, I'm disgusted.
Yeah. I am writing in response to the events of Sunday morning. A terrible thing happened, something I feel was all my fault. You must know I love you all dearly and are in my prayers. I wish peace upon your souls in the Summerland. To my little brother, I apologize for letting you hear what happened and also for causing you any pain or frightening you so much. To my parents, I hope you know that through all of this has happened, I loved you the whole time. I wish that I could take everything back. I wish it hadn't happened. I wish that you were with me right now because now I have no one. I pray you can forgive me and Jeremy too because he was under the influence of mind-altering substances and did it out of love for me. He is most possibly the kindest person I ever met.
Are we joking?
His wish being for my happiness through all the fights and hatred exchanged, I still love you. I am sorry my sarcasm was taken to heart. I never meant to hurt you. I pray you can be at peace somehow.
She's a liar, and I don't believe her. Mm-hmm. Her friends literally showed her a picture of her, and she and Jeremy left. Don't tell me you love them. Don't tell me you wish peace on their souls. You're a liar, Jasmine, and that's all I gotta say about that.
You suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. The investigator tried to get more info on her and Jeremy and agreed. Like, told her, hey, I'll let you two pass notes. Like, obviously, they're gonna read these notes and there are more confessions. So they were passing notes in the couples so that the couples could communicate. Jeremy's interrogation was also a success. He was wide open and admitted he killed her parents, but said it was only because he freaked out while he was high. He then claimed that he tried to convince Jasmine not to go through with their murders beforehand, but he said he would do anything for her, and without even being asked, he offered up all of that information.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was just like, they walked in, and he's just like, spilled his guts. And, you know, what's crazy is he offered up and admitted to killing her parents, but wouldn't admit to killing Jacob. Like,
I wonder why.
Because he didn't do it.
Oh, true. You're right. Right. I mean, they went back and forth and was exactly. Like, you know.
He said Jasmine was responsible for Jacob's death, saying, and I quote, I went upstairs and watched her cut her brother's throat. She knew it had to be done. I didn't touch him. I just paced, then went outside for fresh air before freaking out and leaving.
So now you freaked out because the adrenaline has set off and all your drugs is probably just.
And the investigators were like, that's funny because Jasmine said it was you that killed everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy became very annoyed and said, no, she cut his throat. She cut his throat. I swear to God, she cut his throat. I didn't even want to kill anyone.
Then why did you?
Yeah. He went on to describe her emotions after and said she was stone cold and showed no remorse or cry. The investigators gave the note to Jeremy that Jasmine had written and gave him the opportunity to respond. And this is what the note said. My lovely Bersante?
What's that?
I don't know. Please don't be sorry. I'm the one that needs to be begging you for your forgiveness. If only we ran. Yes, but don't obsess on what could have been. In due time, we shall have our castle. I'm not whole without you. I love you with everything I am. I'll never stop, and promise shall be kept, however desolate it seems. I shall become. Take it one day at a time. It can only get so bad before it gets better. I will be with you in spirit. I hope you're doing all right. However large a task, please don't stress out too much. Having your sanity might be helpful. More than anything, I wish to be with you and hold you again. But until that time comes, know that I love you. XOXO, enjoy in sorrow, my sweet 666.
My sweet devil?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
There's no remorse in any of that. It's only, I just want you to take care of yourself.
Exactly.
Take care of yourself.
So Jeremy responds, Dear Cuddle Bunny, I'm sure that you are right. What's done is done. You not ask for my forgiveness. Indeed, in due time, our empire shall be complete.
It won't.
Before you, I was half. Now I am whole. I can't go back to being half. You are the one that I breathe. You are the moon that breaks through the clouds at night. You are all I need. I long to feel your soft skin. I yearn for your kisses, for they get me high. I hope that you stay true to your words. I shall remain strong. Sometimes I have trouble sleeping at night, but I'm sure the thought of you before will get me through the nights. In due time, we shall be together once again, but until that day arrives, stay strong, keep hope, and have faith. I love you with all my heart and soul. Never forget that, my love, until we speak again. XO Jeremy.
First of all, Jeremy, you've never seen her again, point blank period, okay? Your empire is shattered. You're no longer a whole. You will never be a whole again. You're always going to be half, and you're a POS, okay?
Yeah. So, that was like the first correspondent. They actually corresponded one more time. And in the last one, Jeremy proposes to 12-year-old Jasmine, and she accepts.
Oh, wow. What, you just going to have a prison love?
Yeah. Well, they're vampires. They might telepathically communicate.
I mean, and here, werewolf, he's been alive for 7,000 years. Yeah. So what's a couple more in jail?
Mm-hmm. Both of them ended up being charged with 3 counts of murder and were housed separately in different facilities until court. While in prison awaiting trial, Jeremy was growing in popularity and was gaining a large following of underage girls.
How? Like in the media?
Yeah. They were like obsessed.
Oh, no.
They would stand outside crying for his release. While inside, Jeremy was throwing himself under the bus constantly. He would make statements to other inmates that were going to later be used against him in trial. Mm. So, for example, he made a statement to an undercover cop bragging about what he and Jasmine had done. A year later was Jasmine's day in court. They had separate trials, like, due to her age. So, like, they had to be tried separately. On June 4th, 2007, 90 witnesses were indicted, including Jeremy.
Dang!
Jasmine cried the whole trial and entered in with a plea of not guilty since she was under the control of a predator.
That's a lie. You're the one who initiated this whole thing.
The whole thing. Most of her confessions during interrogation were not allowed because the defense argued they did not give her a right to a lawyer. So all those written confessions.
Oh, what? Yeah.
However, witnesses said at trial that Jasmine told them on several occasions that she wanted her parents dead.
Mm-hmm.
Jasmine did take the stand at her own trial where she claimed it was all a joke, that she never actually wanted her parents dead.
So then how did they end up dead, Jasmine?
Yeah.
How?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. However, prosecution started laying out the flaws in this theory and began asking questions on how Jasmine could have been helpful in preventing this if her claims were true that she didn't want them to die.
Mm-hmm.
She had no comment. The jury only deliberated for 3 hours before hammering down a guilty on all 3 counts.
Let's go.
Jasmine was sentenced on November 8th, 2007, but.
What?
Due to her age,
no.
They were restricted on sentencing.
No.
She was given the max, but for an underage offender.
What is the number?
10 years.
Wait. So what you're telling me? You said 2007?
Yeah.
So she's out of jail right now.
Oh, we'll get there.
Shut up.
6 years of incarceration followed by 4 years of probation. The judge also allowed for time served to be considered, which was 18 months at the time of the trial. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Uh-huh. The judge also put into play that Jasmine have rehabilitation and not just punishment. So they gave her a special sentence. She did not go to jail.
At all.
Uh-uh. She was in rehabilitative custody and supervision. So she's basically in a loony bin, like a mental hospital, for her sentence.
I mean, I know the purpose of prison is rehabilitation, but you planned this. Mm-hmm. You initiated this. You carried it out.
Yeah.
You bragged to people about it.
I honestly think people blame Jeremy and say, like, he groomed her. It sounds like to me she took advantage of him.
Absolutely.
That's
she
where
knew.
I stand on this.
Yeah. Like, he was grooming her, absolutely.
Yeah.
He was doing that, but she knew that he would do anything for her. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why she kept putting on the pressure. So are we going to do this? So are we going to do this? So are we going to do this?
If you loved me, you would do it. If you loved me, you would do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So this whole like rehabilitative like sentence was designed for young violent offenders who were diagnosed with mental illness. Now, we do not know her mental illness because it is kept under lock and key because she was underage. The judge told Jasmine, and I quote, "Jasmine, you can't undo what you've done to your mom, dad, and brother. However, what you can do is honor their memory by dedicating your life to becoming the woman your parents and brother would be proud of." Jasmine served her time at the Alberta Hospital Psychiatric Facility and was released in 2012.
No.
Yeah.
So then, how old was she then?
Well, she was 12 and a half when she was charged.
Okay.
In 2007.
Okay.
So 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 5 years. 12 plus 5.
No.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And she went for her final sentence, like, review in 2016. Because remember, she had those 4 years of probation. Mm-hmm. Jasmine reportedly responded well to rehabilitation and claimed to feel guilty and remorse for her actions. As of 2017, her record has been completely expunged.
Nah, bro.
And her identity has been changed for her protection.
Nah, bro. Nah, bro.
Yeah.
That's not...
not cool.
That's not sitting right with me.
Yes.
So she's just out here with a new identity. I mean, granted, I can see you getting a new identity or whatever, but getting your whole entire record expunged for brutally murdering your family. Granted, she didn't kill her mom and her dad.
But
she planned it. There's no way you get out scot-free and get to get whatever you want just because, oh, it was because you were young at the time.
Mm-hmm. So Jasmine actually has not reoffended since her release. Therefore, she does qualify to have her record completely sealed off. Jasmine lives a secretive life now in Canada, miles away from her family's former residence. Ted Clungston, Medicine Hat's mayor, said he supported the release of Jasmine, but that she could not reside in Medicine Hat ever again.
Okay.
One of the officers on the scene said that he hoped Jasmine had truly rehabilitated.
Yeah.
He said, and I quote, "I don't truly understand it, an act of horror like that, but I hope we can just find peace and move on. My biggest fear is that she hasn't been rehabilitated, that she's tricked those in the system, that she hasn't moved forward. I hope she's truly taken responsibility for this and is able to move forward."
I mean, I hope that as well, because it would suck. Like,
I think she tricked the system. I think she's a manipulative, you know what.
I mean, I really hope that she got herself together, but... That's difficult to.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Jeremy's trial occurred on November 14th, 2008.
That's my birthday.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. Stanky.
Oh, Lord.
No, that was a horrible birthday now.
Ooh. With witnesses testifying against him, along with his taped confession from the undercover cop that Jeremy like had admitted to. Jeremy stood no chance. He took the stand and admitted to killing the Richardson. He claimed he did it because he freaked out and that he was crazy. He claimed he was just there to get Jasmine and leave with her. He never intended to hurt anyone. He was found guilty on all three counts of murder and was sentenced on December 15th, 2008. He was given life in prison with no possibility of parole.
Okay.
Yes. He was not charged with any rape accounts.
Huh.
Jeremy is still in prison to this day and has legally changed his name to Jackson May. I don't know why.
What?
I have no idea. Jackson Jasmine?
Oh.
Maybe.
Is he still obsessed with her?
We do not know if the pair still have contact. That's my last line.
Ooh. I would be curious if they were.
Yep.
I would love to know if she is still in contact with him. Mm-hmm. I would love to know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we won't. We don't know her name.
No. So right now, today, she would be how old?
20. So in, what did we say? She was released in 2012. She was convicted in 07 at 12. So 13, 14, 15, 16. She got out about 18 years old, and that was in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 2020 now. 18. Eight more years.
Do the math, Brooke, please. My brain.
She's 22? No. She's not 22. Oh, it's 2022. It's not even 2020. What am I thinking?
What's happening? Oh, woo! My gosh. Okay. Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. I don't know how old she'd be. She's very young.
Yeah.
So, wow. She's probably my age. No. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So, that wraps up the case. And, like, my biggest question, and I'd love to know, like, comment and DM us, who do you think is at fault? Was Jasmine manipulated by Jeremy, or was Jeremy manipulated by Jasmine?
It was a combination of both.
You think so?
I think it was both.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she got this attention from this older boy. He started to show his interest in her, groomed her, at least began to. And then these conversations turned dark, and she took advantage of that,
mm-hmm,
and started to plant the seed of, we need to get rid of my parents. We need to get rid of my parents.
Right. I agree. But I do want to give kudos to the counselor for doing her freaking job.
Thank goodness you had that folder.
Yeah.
Yes.
And had legal grounds to search the locker.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I think what's crazy about this whole thing is that she could be listening to this podcast.
Absolutely.
And
stay your ass in Canada.
Please. Please. Don't come. Stay right there, girl.
But like, okay. I've really thought a lot about this case. Like, it's consumed me. My thing is, let's say you don't have contact with Jeremy.
Uh-huh.
And now you are known as, like, Emily.
Yeah.
Maybe your new, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I do not know her new name. Maybe her new name's Emily.
Yeah.
Emily now meets this boy. They're dating.
Yeah.
He's ready to meet the parents. What does she tell them?
Oh my gosh, yes.
What's your story?
She what probably said, I would assume that she probably said they died, but has, like, a reason other than she, like, her boyfriend murdered them.
You have to keep up a constant lie under a new identity.
Yeah. And I wonder if she even acknowledges them as, like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I had a mom and, like.
Or what if she doesn't? What if she's like, I was abandoned?
Maybe.
And in and out of the system.
Because you have to feel something every time someone acts. Yes. Like, oh, your family must be like da 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 da. Or you're like, do you have any siblings? And imagine if she's just like, no.
Exactly.
That's nuts.
That has, like, drove me, like, that's what I've wondered the most.
Yeah.
Because you're granted a new life. You're not out here just being a hermit. You don't just live in your house. You clearly go and socialize at some extent, even if it's in the grocery store.
Yeah, and you have to have a job to support yourself.
Exactly.
Wow.
What do you tell people?
I would love to know.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is another case of Canada and other countries releasing and then protecting their inmates.
I mean, I know, again, prison, like, you're not meant
to stay forever,
to not to stay in prison. Like, the point is rehabilitation. But how do we truly know if you've been rehabilitated? Because I've heard cases where people they've claimed they've been rehabilitated, mm-hmm, they get out, and then they go back to it again. How can you guarantee?
You can't.
That they are good?
You can't.
Like, does anyone know? What is the rules? How do you know that they are truly a good person?
I don't know. I just... This it took a lot.
Yeah, that took a lot out of me.
Yeah.
I feel some type of way, and these kids feel some type of way because they looking all crazy like, we got to go.
Well, the bell doesn't dismiss you. We do.
But today, we just going to go ahead.
You just go home because that was a lot.
That was a lot. Go ahead. We'll see you next time.
Oh, bye.
Bye.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.